What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey there, and welcome back to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas, and I am so glad you're tuning in today. In today's episode, we are diving into the topic of intensive mothering, the intense pressure that the contemporary mom feels. And to have this conversation, I invited back onto the podcast Erica Jossa. Erica was previously on Holding Space talking about the invisible mental load of postpartum, one of the most listened to episodes. I'll be sure to include a link to that in the show notes if that is an experience you can relate to and are looking for some support around. And in today's episode, Erica's coming back on to explore some of the complexities of the construct of mothering, especially the modern day mother's experience, with so much information and a lot of pressure to do it all, to enjoy it while she's doing it, and to do it on her own. It's not working. It's just not working. But then we've got to somehow figure out how to release some of the load that we're carrying and the resentment that we're feeling by eliciting support and passing some of this stuff to, say, our partner. But how do we do that? How do we navigate this and change these roles and this cycle and let go of control when they might not do it like we would have done it? And yet the kids are going to go out into the world and we still feel like we're going to be the ones judged if the homework isn't turned in or the outfit's looking a little wonky and they're not wearing something that's the right size. And. Oh my gosh. It's heavy. It's a lot. And Erica is here to support us. So in this episode, we're going to give you both our own personal experiences so you leave feeling less alone in this. We're therapists and we've struggled with these things tremendously, as well as every other parent that we've worked with has also, and with supportive strategies for how to take some steps to release the mother load. And hey, that is the title of her brand new book coming out April 2024, Releasing the Mother Load: How to Carry Less and Enjoy Motherhood More. Erica is one of my most wise friends, and I am really excited to get a chance to share this conversation with you. Hey listeners, really quick before we dive into today's podcast episode, since I know how much this community is invested in improving their own mental health as mothers, I wanted to personally recommend the podcast Thoughts from the Couch with licensed mental health counselor and anxiety treatment specialist Justine Carino. Justine and I have had the pleasure of being on each other's podcasts, and we are in alignment on wanting to support the modern mom. On her podcast, Justine discusses ways that ambitious and high-achieving women can manage anxiety and stress, overcome perfectionism, create healthier boundaries between work and home, and let go of their exhausting people-pleasing tendencies. If you're craving advice from a professional that is relatable and down-to-earth, tune into Thoughts from the Couch every other Monday on iTunes, Spotify, and Amazon. You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. Hi, Erica. I am so excited to be sitting down with you again any chance I get to spend time with you. I am so game, and I am really excited for our conversation today and just so grateful to have you here.
I've missed you so much, friend. I appreciate you having me back. I'm excited to be here with you and with your community.
Thank you so much for coming on. Girl, you have a book. It's coming out into the world. I can only imagine, just knowing you and how much heart and energy and pieces of yourself that you pour into everything that you do, how incredible this book is going to be. And so it's called Releasing the Mother Load: How to Carry Less and Enjoy Motherhood More. And yes, please. I'll take all of that, please. So first, tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write this book, and then we can dive into our topic today of intensive mothering, the perfect mother myth, the invisible load, all the good stuff.
Yeah. It's interesting because it really starts with my own story and journey. So I am a registered psychotherapist, did not go to school thinking I would have a platform, create content, write a book. You know, it was so not in the plan for things. And I'd been in private practice for nearly 10 years before becoming a mom, and got thrown into the deep end of motherhood with three boys in the span of 3.5 years. And I went through my own postpartum depression and anxiety during that time, and it really surprised me for a few different reasons. Like, I'm a clinician. I literally teach these skills for a living. Like, I should be coping better than this. You know how we do that to ourselves? Like, I should know. I should be handling this better. But then also, I had never heard of maternal mental health as a specialty in all of my education, in all of my experience. So I really niched down, and how we met was starting our platforms kind of just before the pandemic and around the pandemic. And one of the things that the platform, Happy as a Mother at the time, now MomWell, really became known for was our Invisible Load series. And it was taking this invisible labor that we carry, whether it's cognitive or emotional, mental labor, and putting it into like a visual collage style almost, so that you could see, oh, wait a minute, laundry is more than just laundry. Laundry is all of these other invisible tasks. And so when my agent reached out to me, also in the pandemic with her second boy, and that's how she found the platform, she's like, I think there's really like more to be said. Like, you need a medium that is more long form to really round some of these concepts out. What is the one book you want to put out into the world? And that's how Releasing the Mother Load was born. Just going through my own experience of trying to be perfect, trying to be the perfect good mom, carry everything, do it all right, not harm my kids, you know, and all the trying to prevent trauma that we all so badly want to do in our generation. But then ultimately reaching this breakdown, term breakthrough I talked about in the book, where I was just drowning. And postpartum depression, anxiety was a piece of that. But my perfectionism and determination to own every single thing in motherhood as my own was a big driving force. So I had to tell the story about this awful morning. I got pulled over by the police. I'm like hyperventilating, throwing up in my driveway, having this like total breakdown moment that actually just broke it all open. And I was like, I can't be perfect. I can't do all of these things. I can't carry all of these things and do them all myself. And that's when my husband and I started a journey of like, okay, what does equal partnership look like? How can I relinquish some of these things? What are the hurdles in me letting them go that I keep picking them back up? Like really becoming curious about how motherhood could feel more sustainable, how I could enjoy it and not resent it. And that journey is one essentially that I guide readers through in how they can get to that place for themselves so that they're not feeling like they're drowning, feeling like they're resenting their role, and still feeling like they're failing each day they get up and need to recommit to do better tomorrow. So
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
that's what inspired mostly like a lot of my own journey and knowing that it's not unique to just me.
Mm. There is this moment that happens, and I'm thinking in particular to the content that you were sharing on Instagram around the time of COVID with, as you said, like a collage of images that was like, you know, something like getting out of the house in the morning, right? Like getting ready for school in the morning, yeah, or planning a birthday party, or, you know, the laundry, right? Like how you would take this one thing that feels like this one part of being a parent, running a household, and then you would within that break it down into all of these layers of things that are, yes, some visible, but many invisible components of the planning, the preparation, the tabs we have open in our brain. And there's, and you talk about this in your book, there's this like aha moment that happens when we all of a sudden bring what has been invisible, but like running on the background and like taking up energy and space in our mind and bringing that into the visible. Tell me a little bit more about that moment.
Yeah, I tell this story. How laundry can inspire like an epiphany is beyond me, but it did in this context. I call it in the book like my aha moment where the invisible became visible. And I was postpartum with my third. We were a family of five. As you can imagine, laundry with every spit up and blowout and toddlers and was just accumulating. And my partner and I already had a system where he would notice when it needed to be put in, put it in the washer, change it to the dryer, and then put it in this pile for me to fold. And so there was already some division there, but it started to build up and over a couple of weeks became this enormous mountain that I was just avoiding. I could feel the resistance. I could feel the avoidance. And every time I went by, I was like, what kind of capable adult can't just fold this laundry? Like, it takes no time. Why can't I just get this done? And every time I walk by, I'm like, all the shoulds, all the why can't you, all of the harsh, you know, inner critic stuff coming out. And one day it shifted into curiosity. And I was like, why is this one like task so difficult for me? I don't understand. And it was a change of season. I had to rotate all of the kids' dressers to different seasonal clothes, which meant that I also had to create a list of all the items that I had to shop for that we didn't have. And then I actually had to go shop for those items. And then I actually had to fold that mountain of laundry and then put it in the dressers. Before I even knew it, it was an additional 4 to 6 hours of work that was just like it was hidden behind that, just fold the laundry and put it away. And once I mapped that out and could see it, then my partner and I could have a discussion about, okay, how do we divide this out? What do we do? So in the book, I actually, I talk about how we have to first make the invisible load visible. And I provide load maps in order to do that. So instead of putting the work on the reader, I try to carve out as many of these load maps in the book that I can think of to do that work for you. And that's the anticipatory work, the planning, the researching. Then there's the actual physical task of the folding the laundry, which usually isn't the thing that is weighing us down. And then there's the managing or the ongoing oversight of that system or of that task. And so I map these out in the book. And once it's visible, once we've had that aha moment, then we can really think about why we have ownership over this role, how we ended up in ownership over this role, and then how to divide it out from there.
So let's, within what you're talking about, what
is coming up for me actually as I stare. It's not in – we're on video right now. You can't see it. It's what I'm staring at right now is a pile of laundry and, you know, just all the – like right now what I'm thinking about is – you know, we don't have huge seasons here in San Diego, but I'm like sizes. Like I know that there's plenty of this stuff that needs to be either donated. And it's like, where am I going to donate it? Is there someone I can give it to? What do they need now? That's like a different size. I'm also thinking about like how laundry has become this, me folding laundry has become part of this, part of actually supporting my toddler in more independent play. If anyone who's listening has a toddler that struggles with independent play, I had Susie from Busy Toddler on, and you know, she gives a whole method there for how to support independent play. And one of the things that I do is I use, okay, June, I have this task I got to do that she can see me doing. And while I'm doing this, we can set a timer and you're going to play independently for this period of time. And that's been really helping us kind of break a little tricky cycle we were in with her not playing independently and the older kids, you know, not getting enough attention and nothing around the house being able to get done because she, right? So the laundry is also connected to this other tab in my brain of supporting my kid with independent play and why that's important, not just for her, but for the other kids. And oof, I gotta re-listen to this podcast or I gotta watch this video or I've gotta learn how to do this to support her. And it's all connected. And mm-hmm. something that in my house and with my partner that we've had to kind of walk around is how sometimes my perfectionism, which is a part of me that's really stepping up and trying to protect my underlying anxiety and the things that I'm feel really vulnerable around and afraid around. And how sometimes then it leads me to get into this place of needing everything to be perfect, but also like under my control, mm-hmm. Like almost like not trusting, right? And that's been tricky, the way in which I have like overfunctioned in that role in our household. And I know that I'm not alone in that too, right? And mm-hmm. and I know that it's not just me. It's also ways in which my partner has not stepped in these moments too, right? Like, so it's a dynamic. It's a cycle between the two of us.
Right.
There isn't blame on either side, but there is this dance we do around overfunctioning, underfunctioning, right? Like control, stepping out, right? Like withdrawing. Their enemies. Yeah. For some folks, it can even, you know, there's been the word weaponizing competence has like, you know, shown up in this space too. And we'd have these conversations. So I would love to hear your thoughts on this, on the role of control and how mm-hmm. control shows up in the loads that we carry as moms.
Yeah. I would love to unpack that. And then I would also love to come back to the partner component here. And I really position in the book that our partners are not the problem and we are not the problem, and mm-hmm. how this dynamic and this expectation of who has unwritten ownership over these tasks just via gender roles and expectations mm-hmm. really sets us up for this pattern.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the perfectionism and control piece, it is so tricky. And I've had this conversation with Eve Rodsky, and I love Fair Play and I love the method and I love Eve. Like, she's a friend of mine. And one of the things that I find will happen is we will have a willing partner often. I know that's not always the case, but a lot of the women and the mothers that I talk to will have a willing partner, but they feel like they have to manage them. It's like, write me a list. How can I help you? What do you need from me? Still sort of like reporting to this managerial role where ownership is implied, that it sits with me still and that this is mine and you are just assisting me. And then I get resentful because I don't have a choice. I just somehow ended up carrying all of this load on my shoulders. And so what I find ends up happening is we'll do the Fair Play method and we will divvy out the physical tasks. And there is an uptick in partners supporting with physical tasks more than previous generations, but that doesn't touch the ownership issue. And one of the things I really dive into the book is understanding what we use as a measuring stick for our worth and our performance in our role and what it means to be a good mom is often synonymous with caregiving tasks, household tasks, how our home looks, how our children are presented, how they look, you know, whether things are tidy, whether they're not tidy. Because this is often the messaging that we receive, is that being a good mom is these things, you know, the home-cooked meals, the patient, nurturing, loving, kind, the always tidy home, the being able to serve and help others always, even if it's at a cost of herself. And a lot of this is woven in with intensive mothering ideals and beliefs, which is the really prevalent construct of motherhood in our society right now. It's that we need to be and do it all, even if it's like time consuming. And like the more time and labor we put into something, the better it is for our child. That we are the best biologically suited to care for our children. That we should be solely and completely fulfilled by our motherhood role and not desire things outside of it. So when I'm looking at these tasks and when I'm trying to divvy them out with my partner and I have these internalized beliefs that I should be the one, then when I hand over meal planning to my partner and try to give them ownership over that, and they're novice, I'm expert, they're just beginning, right? And it is messy and it is not well balanced and it is, you know, things get forgotten because it wasn't anticipated and it goes clunky at first.
Yeah.
I pick it back up because that feels like it's woven into me being a good mom. Like it's woven into my identity. So it's hard to let go of because I feel like I've got to fill it to a certain standard in order to prove my worth. Yeah.
And would you say there's an element of this, right? I think a lot of perfectionism, right, is like this outward gaze of like, I need to find a way to control how others on the outside are looking in at me as a way to keep myself safe and to keep these parts of me that feel really vulnerable and messy and imperfect, like hidden. And when we hand these things over, and a lot of these things, right, are going to go out into the world, the packed lunchbox, right, the outfit they're going out in, like, you know, the if I hand over, right, like homework and reading or signing the papers that like, or making sure that everything's in the backpack going out with them in the day, that like if they go out into the world, that there's like an assumption that the outside world is then going to judge me for how imperfect that whatever it was is, right? Like how they were dressed or, you know, whether or not they had everything they needed in their backpack, right? Like, and so because of that fear of that outward gaze and then the perfectionism that armors up to keep that part of me that's afraid safe, then it's like, well, screw it. I'm just going to do this then because I'm going to get judged for this. Does that resonate?
It makes total sense. Yes. And this is really where those gender norms or those role norms come into play. So you might not care about the front foyer, you being like my husband, my partner, may not care about the front foyer when people stop by because they don't look at you when the house is a mess. They look at me. And so these societal expectations of our genders and our roles in the home serve to kind of like police us back into these caged roles that have no freedom of expression or can't, like struggle to be divvied up because it becomes a reflection of us or I don't know, the school is an example. So it is a full-time freaking job to keep up with the correspondence from the school and the forms from the school and the emails from the school. And like, I just can't. And then three kids who are sick and all of that. And so I'm in meetings all day long. My role is very demanding in my company. And so I'm like, take me off of all correspondence and only call my husband. Like I am not available. And the amount of times they still called me and didn't call him. So like society will try to like put us back into these more traditional roles. So it's difficult to break out of them, but then we have to really look inward to our values and what is important to us and understand why we are doing this. To have an equal partnership in the home, we cannot be on autopilot and fall into the autopilot roles and standard quo because they weren't built for equal partnership. They were built for the mom to carry everything and the partner to go to work, or their time to be protected, or their income to be protected. Mm-hmm. And they were not conducive to an equal partnership. So if you are satisfied with your traditional role, then that's wonderful. If you are drowning, and if it's not working, and if you're resenting motherhood and your partner as a result, well, then we need to like sit back for a second and like define motherhood for ourselves for a moment and develop a new measuring stick by which we fact check our worth against versus these domestic and caregiving tasks.
Mm. Okay. So you use this word intensive mothering in the book. Can you – I think we're kind of touching on that here. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how – like is motherhood harder now for us in this generation, right? Like I don't know. There's on social media, on TikTok, there's like these battles that go out, right? Of like, is it harder now or it's always been hard? And like, and also it's like, why do we need to battle that out across generations? But I do think that, you know, we're talking to millennial parents here most likely, and, or at least this era of mothering and parenting. Mm-hmm. And there are unique challenges, I think, that we are facing in this generation that, like, because we are the ones with the little kids at home, like, we need to talk about what's going on right now. What's the context of mothering and parenting in this era of parenting? Mm-hmm. And talk – so let's start with this idea of intensive mothering. Talk to us a little more about that.
So there is – like mother, like the person, the actual person. And then there's like motherhood, the construct, the set of norms, the rules in which we operate within in motherhood. And those are really based on like the societal and cultural context in which we are living. And it's different country to country. And like it, and not all forms of motherhood, forms of expression are the same. And yet it feels like it should be like there's one right way. And so right now, the most prevalent construct or set of ideals for motherhood is intensive mothering. And there's a few core beliefs. And this is according to sociological research, like that I'm not just winging it. Like this is being studied where we are best biologically suited, that we should give all of our resources to our children, time, energy, schedule, everything. Like we should continue to, like I think about like how a baby in the womb like just depletes our body of like the nutrients that like that just takes from us.
Yeah, yeah.
In the same way that should continue for till like the day we die. And then also that it we should be wholly and completely fulfilled with this role. We should be happy and we should desire nothing outside of it, which is actually really counter the messaging we receive before we step into motherhood, because as millennial women, often we've been raised to like go after what you want. You can break these glass ceilings. You can go to school. You can be and do and accomplish. And then we get into motherhood and it's like, but you shouldn't want to, because you should be wholly and completely satisfied with your children and how, like, you know, what kind of mom wants something more outside of their role. So these are some of the messages that are really like entrenched in our society that we internalize over interactions and time that ultimately we on autopilot continue with and live out and carry into our motherhood journey.
When I got pregnant with my first, all of a sudden I was so much more aware of what I was ingesting, whether it was the food I was eating or the vitamins or the supplements I was taking. I really wanted to prioritize pure and high quality ingredients. And that same mindset has stuck with me, especially when it comes to omega-3. It is so important to support our heart, brain, and eye health, but we need to be aware of contamination in fish, such as heavy metals or dioxins. That's why I highly recommend Puri's O3 Ultra Pure Fish Oil.
I got the chance to meet the founder of Peary and hear all about their full transparency that comes with all of their products. Each batch is third-party tested for things like heavy metals and pesticides. But don't just take my word for it, because with Peary, you can find the actual data behind every batch with a QR code that comes on the bottle. Right now, Peary is offering my listeners 20% off their O3 Ultra Pure Fish Oil and all of their other great product. Go to my special URL, peary.com/Dr. Cassidy, and use my promo code Dr. Cassidy. This even applies to the already discounted subscriptions. You'll get almost a third off the price. So go to puori.com/drcassidy. Don't wait. Use promo code Dr. Cassidy at peary.com/Dr. Cassidy. And then we have all those messages. And then in this generation of mothering, we have also access to so much more information. And with that, I think comes these expectations, right? And comparison, and I think that it's just, there's this vicious cycle too. I think of moments where we feel like we start to touch and feel how it feels like it's not working and it's too much. And that can feel like shame. There just, this must be something wrong with me that I'm not check to all the things that Erica, that you just said. And then we can, in what does shame do? It says, oof, don't let anyone see this part of you, right? Like hide. And so maybe we do hide. But yet in that moment, there is still that part of me that wants connection, right? Like that wants to feel seen and understood or get information, more information to help me figure out how do I protect myself and my family in this like shame puddle I'm like swimming in. And then in that, what do we have access to? We have access to these handheld devices that just are incredibly addicting and have us all hooked. Like we can't deny that. And we're like, well, wait, here's information. Here's connection, right? I have this thing in my hand and it's also private. I can do that from, you know, my, from the bathroom where I'm hiding out. And then we turn to that and we have now more information coming in, right? More information for our brain to process. Other people's viewpoints on parenting or the vacation that they're on, and I think I used to say everybody's just like curated highlight reel, and like I think that for sure there's a lot more folks trying to show up and be real. But like even though I am a therapist sharing information and trying to show up and be real, I'm still not sharing everything. Like you're not in my house behind closed doors seeing how messy it can be, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have in these moments where we're trying to meet these expectations, we also have now all this more information and access to other people's experiences. And I think that adds to the intensity of this, mm-hmm. what feels like an intensive, right?
It teaches us not to trust ourselves, right? Yeah. So there is this need to prove that we are right and we are good. Like this is our most valued and treasured role. It makes sense. It makes sense that we want to feel like we're doing a good job. But then when we look out and all of the conflicting approaches and philosophies and, you know, arguments break out in the comments about ways that things should be done, there's so much noise and chaos that it feels like a bit of a free falling. Like, I don't know. It feels so chaotic, but we continue to look externally to measure ourselves and see how we're doing in our role versus like internally turning to our values and learning to trust ourselves and build our own experience and intuition. When we look out and we compare, we are seeing somebody operating in their value system, which does not have to be identical to ours. So when we anchor ourselves in our own values, and we have a value sort exercise, I talk about values in the book, take you through an exercise, and I have a free value sort that I offer alongside it. When we can carve out what our own personal values are in this social media kind of comparison, wild, wild west of motherhood, then I can look when I'm scrolling and say, oh, that person who's making sourdough bread, you know, is operating out of their values of whether it's creativity or, you know, sustainability or resource, like whatever that value is for them, and say, amazing. I celebrate that for them. I don't have to pick up that value now and add it into my bucket as something I have to act out and live out every day.
Yeah.
But when we feel the need to adopt all of these messages that we are seeing without critically weighing them against our value system, then we are drowning. We are drowning in trying to please everybody, feeling like we're failing the whole time.
Mm. Okay. So let's picture this mom right now. Maybe it's you, maybe it's me, maybe it's the listener, maybe it's all of us. And she is in the bathroom with the door closed, and she is feeling really burnt out. Like, she's doing a million things, but none of them well. And she's just yelled at her kids. She's resenting her partner. She feels like if she just gets more information, right? If like that there's someone else out there that must have the answer. And so there's that part of her that like is like, that book that's like, you know, that I'm supposed to read, or that podcast episode, or that, right? Like, and then also thinking to herself from a place of shame, like, I bet so-and-so isn't like sitting on the floor of her bathroom, right? Like feeling like total shit. And what would be your message to her? Like, what is that, like, you know, like that bathroom moment, that like sliding on the floor bathroom moment? Like, what is one thing that you'd want that mom to hear? Mm-hmm. Maybe something tangible. I know I just said like that book, but like, you know, obviously like there is resources in your book and in these books. Like, what is one step that we can take to get us into a place to start learning, to start healing, to start sharing this load, to start making the invisible visible, to start creating more space for ourselves within this role and this experience?
It's interesting because when you describe that picture and you're describing the moment and visualizing her, I'm also visualizing the invisible backpack that she's carrying, or three, if she's got three children, that is, you know, weighed down in bricks that finally she's crumbling under.
Yeah.
But that, like, she feels the weight of, but can't articulate and can't describe, and then feels like, why can't I just do it? Everybody else is doing it, but I can see the three backpacks filled with weights and filled with bricks, right? So I think that it is so critically important to, one, acknowledge, yes, I am drowning. I'm carrying three invisible backpacks, and I don't really know what that consists of just yet, but like, it is a lot. And then figuring out, like, sorting through that backpack. And this is really the practical guide that my book is. It's like, okay, the shoulds that I am carrying, how did they get there? Do I subscribe to them? Did I opt in, or did somebody put that on me? And do I want to keep it, or do I want to shred it? And the tasks that I'm carrying that are in this backpack, did I sign my name to them and opt in, or did somebody auto assign them or assume me to those? And can they be distributed? Can they be let go of altogether? And this takes time. And I provide tools like a load map that you can write out and make the invisible visible. But the realization that it's not because you are not good enough or you are failing that the backpacks feel heavy and hard to carry. It's literally unrealistic to continue under the weight of that load. I'm going to breathe for a second. Sorry.
It's okay. Take your time, you need. It's heavy.
The amount of clients, and I'm sure you have a similar experience, that I work with who, oh my gosh. No.
Okay. In many ways what I see you right now like feeling is like how much you've witnessed, and like not just the weight of your own backpack, but like the weight of every single backpack you have seen a mom like take off and show you and be like, this is too much.
Yeah.
It's really heavy.
Well, and when we have these moments of sitting on the bathroom floor, feeling like we are failing, we've lost our cool, we're burnt out, we're exhausted, we're at sort of the end of our rope, the default behavior to blame ourselves, that we, if we could just do more, if we could just not lose our cool, if we could just have done X, Y, and Z differently, then this wouldn't have happened. Versus stepping back, kind of bird's eye view, and saying, who the fuck even expects somebody to do this? Right? Like, it is so inhumane and unrealistic to expect somebody in isolation to carry this much of a load. But because everybody is drowning in plain sight and we look around and it's sort of the norm, nobody questions it. And so I think the real message when you think about that mom in that room is like, you are not flawed. You are not struggling because you're broken. You're not struggling because you're not good enough. You're struggling because the load that you've been expected to carry is entirely unrealistic. Like, yeah. In 1950s, only 25% of mothers worked outside of the home. Now, 86% of women work outside of the home. Mothers work outside of the home. And none of the ownership of the domestic and care work has shifted, even though our entire lives have shifted. Mm-hmm. So we're still carrying both of these things full time in ownership of all of the areas. It's enough. It's unrealistic and it has to change. Yeah.
You and I, and collectively, I want to hear everyone else's voice right now, like saying enough. So here's a moment though that I want to kind of picture in this bathroom scene we've co-created here is this mom starts to take this backpack off and take some of the like rocks, boulders out of this backpack, and maybe she starts to hand it over and you put your hand on it and then she grips harder and she tries to pull it back because she's so afraid of what this is going to mean to let go of this control. And in this moment, what I want to do is actually in this bathroom scene, like I want to hand her your book. I want to take the rock and hand her your book. That's like, I'm like, this is, there's so much noise and here's, let's tune it all out. And here's what I want to hand you, truly. But in that moment when she grips that rock harder and she looks at you with her eyes, like, I can't, it's too scary. What do you want to say to her? What do you want to say to her in that moment where her eyes go wide and she's like, I don't think I can let this go?
I think that this is where we carve out our values. Because as you start to hand things off, they create a vacuum of emptiness where our identity has been handed off and we don't have anything to fill it in with. Like, it does feel uncomfortable or it feels empty. So when we understand our values and the things that we want to fill that time with, and you and I have had a conversation on my podcast about values and how we want to live those out, or even unpacking why we're holding on to that thing so tightly. Like, what is it that we're trying to achieve? I unpack this in the book around food, for example. Why is it that we feel like every curated meal needs to be perfect, well-balanced, home-cooked, and everything? What are we trying to achieve in doing that? Are we trying to show love? Are we trying to nurture? Is it acts of service? Like, what is the value there that's so important to us? And how can we express that value or live it out in a way that is not killing us? Like, that is not draining us entirely. Mm-hmm. So understanding our values and what the true goal is so that we can figure out an expression that doesn't tap us out is one way. And another really important way to be able to do this is not to take on our biggest load head on. Like if we're perfectionist and there's something that we want to hold on to, like how we dress the kids or what their wardrobes look like or something that we want to be perfectionist about that, like we would have such a hard time handing off to our partner. Like don't challenge yourself with releasing that load first. Start with things that you don't like, that you feel like you can compromise on and find a tolerable common standard with your partner that you can release more easily, that don't feel so woven in and so threatening. And that builds up some of the capacity and some of the freedom to either one, continue to hold on to the one or two or three things that you want to be perfectionist about and releasing the others, or to buy some of that freedom and feel like, okay, it feels safe and I like having some of this capacity, and then choosing to let some of it go. But what we can't do is hold on to every brick equally, expecting 100% perfection in every single area, because that's the road to burnout.
100%.
But, you can hold three. We'll give you three. Hold on to your three and try to find a common standard for the rest.
What you're sharing here really reminds me of this, you know, an evidence-based approach to treating OCD, which and you don't need to have OCD to be holding onto these bricks so tightly, right? But there's this sort of element of what oftentimes that part of us needs is to kind of map out, like, what are the fears and what's a 10, right? And what's a one? And we may start with the one, right? Meaning that's the less intense fear, and expose ourselves to this thing that we're afraid of. And in here, in this case, it would be exposure to letting go of something related to parenting and running a household. And when we expose ourselves to this thing with support, right, with some guidance, which it sounds like your book offers as well in a framework, then we begin to see, oh, okay, either the bad thing doesn't happen that I thought was going to happen, and oh, that's different. Now my brain has to wire that experience, right, now that I've exposed myself to it. Or if something does happen, if your kid goes to school one day, like without their homework, without a lunchbox, right, that like, oof, the scary thing happened, and then to see how we survive that, right? And it's like, wow, this thing that I was so afraid of experiencing, now maybe we've experienced some element of it, and to see that we as a family can survive it, now our brain has to wire that experience too. And it's exposure response therapy. And I know that's not, we're not doing that therapy here necessarily, but like there is this element of taking this in a stepwise process, right? To expose ourselves to these things, to expose these parts of ourselves to these things we're so afraid of letting go of, and seeing that we can survive it and that we can handle it. And that at the end of the day, you talked about space. All of a sudden, there's more space. And I love the word margin that I'll oftentimes use with my clients about creating margins in their day-to-day life. And whether that's between a trigger and a response, creating some space, or whether that's in their calendar, actually carving out and protecting space for themselves. And here I see with this backpack metaphor, we're creating some space here. And you talked about there's like a vacuum. There's this like emptiness that it can feel like, and we can be afraid of that. But in that space now, we have the opportunity to, with intention, decide what actually is important to us, what we actually want to be prioritizing, and oh my gosh, space to take care of yourself so that you have more resources and energy to show up in those moments with your kid where ideally what you're trying to chase is presence, but what's been robbing you of that presence all along has been just checking off, if I just get this thing done, if I'm just perfect at all these things, if I finally complete the to-do list, then I can be present. But it's never ending. the to-do list. And so we're chasing something that is unreachable. But instead, with this space and maybe a recuperation of our energy and resources, we can show up in a way that has that is aligned and tap into that intuition that has actually always been there all along. We've just been looking outside of us for. Is that right? What do you say?
Yeah, I so agree with that. And one of the temptations, I think, as women who maybe are not done growing their family or unsure about whether we're done growing our family, as soon as we find that space at that capacity, a knee-jerk reaction is to fill it with another baby or to consider it or to think about it. And I would urge you to pause. It doesn't have to be filled. We don't, just because we have capacity doesn't necessarily mean that we should fill it with another baby. This is such a common conversation in my community. So we joke and I have a ton of podcasts on this topic. Like we've often been told when we have capacity that, you know, our role is to be a mom and to have children. Like just pause. What else could we fill that space with? Could it be a hobby? Could it be an interest? Could it be any, like it could be anything, right? And just like not going into the knee-jerk reactions in that moment, but just trying to sit in that discomfort and building that tolerance. It's going to come in us sitting with that and then also in the allowing our partners to be novice. We have expert level. We have the 10,000 hours to be expert in all of these areas. And our partners are probably like novice to intermediate depending on the role. And it's going to be messy and it's going to be uncomfortable for a while. And that's a tolerance that we have to build to allow that messiness and that exploration to happen, because that's how they get to expert level status. And we have to give room for that in order for them to then be an equal partner and be on par in some of these areas. So as you said, that comes with some exposure and sitting in those uncomfortable feelings at times.
So I'm handing this mom, I'm handing myself this book in this bathroom floor moment. Now, where can the listener find you and find the book? Because this is where they're going to get so much more of this process and these steps.
Yeah, I would so love to be your guide on this journey. That's really how this book, the tone of it, and how it's formatted to go on this journey with you. The book is available wherever books are sold. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Indigo here, and Chapters in Canada, your indie bookstores, all the places. At ericajossa.com, so ericajossa.com. We've got the free downloads to pair with it. So the value sort, there's a companion guide there, lots of resources. And then beyond that, my platform is MomWell on Instagram, the MomWell podcast, momwell.com. And that's really for the person who might be struggling with anxiety, depression, similar to a lot of the content you talk about as well, in adjusting to their new parenting role. They can find me there.
I'm going to share all those links in the show notes where folks can go and find you. Erica, thank you so much. As always, I leave our conversations and our time together feeling so connected and fulfilled and less alone and just... I love you.
So I love you too. Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in and I'll catch you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.